Theon. One moment he was asleep, the next awake. Kyra nestled against him, one arm draped lightly over his, her breath brushing his back. He could hear her breathing, soft and steady. The sheet was tangled about them. It was the black of night. The bedchamber was dark and still.
What is it? Did I hear something? Someone?
Wind sighed faintly against the shutters. Somewhere far off he heard the yowl of a cat in heat. Nothing else.
Sleep. Greyjoy, he told himself. The castle is quiet, and you have guards posted. At your door, at the gates, on the armory.
He might have put it down to a bad dream, but he did not remember dreaming. Kyra had worn him out. Until Theon had sent for her, she had lived all her 18 years in the winter town without ever setting foot inside the walls of a castle. She came to him wet and eager and lithe as a weasel, and there had been a certain undeniable spice to fucking a common tavern wench in Lord Eddard Stark's own bed. She murmured sleepily as Theon slid out from under her arm and got to his feet. A few embers still smouldered in the hearth. Wex slept on the floor at the foot of the bed, rolled up inside his cloak and dead to the world. Nothing moved. Theon crossed to the window and threw open the shutters. Night touched him with cold fingers, and goose prickles rose on his bare skin. He leaned against the stone sill and looked out on the dark towers, empty yards, black sky, and more stars than a man could ever count if he lived to be 100. A half-moon floated above the bell tower and cast its reflection on the roof of the glass gardens. He heard no alarums, no voices, not so much as a footfall.
All's well, Greyjoy. Hear the quiet. You ought to be drunk with joy. You took Winterfell with fewer than 30 men, a feat to sing of.
Theon started back to bed. He'd roll Kyra on her back and fuck her again. That ought to banish these phantoms. Her gasps and giggles would make a welcome respite from this silence. He stopped. He had grown so used to the howling of the direwolves that he scarcely heard it any more. But some part of him, some hunter's instinct, heard its absence. Erzin stood outside his door, a sinewy man with a round shield slung over his back.
The wolves are quiet, Theon told him. Go see what they're doing, and come straight back.
The thought of the direwolves running loose gave him a queasy feeling. He remembered the day in the wolf's wood when the wildlings had attacked Bran. Summer and Grey Wind had torn them to pieces. When he prodded Wex with the toe of his boot, the boy sat up and rubbed his eyes. Make certain Bran Stark and his little brother are in their beds, and be quick about it.
My lord,
Kyra called sleepily,
go back to sleep. This does not concern you.
Theon poured himself a cup of wine and drank it down. All the time he was listening, hoping to hear a howl.
Too few men, he thought sourly. I have too few men. If Asher does not come.
Wex returned the quickest, shaking his head from side to side. Cursing, Theon found his tunic and breeches on the floor where he had dropped them in his haste to get at Kyra. Over the tunic he donned a jerkin of iron-studded leather, and he belted a longsword and dagger at his waist. His hair was wild as the wood, but he had larger concerns. By then Erzin was back.
The wolves be gone.
Theon told himself he must be as cold and deliberate as Lord Eddard.
Rouse the castle, he said. Herd them out into the yard, everyone. We'll see who's missing. And have Lauren make a round of the gates. Wex, with me.
He wondered if Stig had reached Deepwood Mott yet. The man was not as skilled a rider as he claimed. None of the Iron Men were much good in the saddle. But there had been time enough. Asher might well be on her way.
And if she learns that I have lost the Starks,
it did not bear thinking about. Bran's bedchamber was empty, as was Rickon's half a turn below. Theon cursed himself. He should have kept a guard on them, but he deemed it more important to have men walking the walls and protecting the gates than to nursemaid a couple of children, one a cripple. Outside he heard sobbing as the castle folk were pulled from their beds and driven into the yard. "I'll give them reason to sob. I'll use them gently, and this is how they repay me." He'd even had two of his own men whipped bloody for raping the kennel girl to show them he meant to be just. "They still blame me for the rape, though, and the rest." He deemed that unfair. Micken had killed himself with his mouth, just as Benfred had. As for Shale, he had to give someone to the drowned guard. His men expected it. "I bear you no ill will," he told the Septon, before they threw him down the well. "But you and your guards have no place here now." You'd think the others would be grateful he hadn't chosen one of them, but no. He wondered how many of them were part of this plot against him. Erzin returned with Black Lauren. "The Hunter's Gate," Lauren said. "Best come see." The Hunter's Gate was conveniently sited close to the kennels and kitchens. It opened directly on fields and forests, allowing riders to come and go without first passing through the winter town, and so was favoured by hunting parties. "Who had the guard here?" Theon demanded. "Drennan and Squint." Drennan was one of the men who'd raped Parla. "If they let the boys escape, I'll have more than a little skin off their backs this time. I swear it." "No need for that," Black Lauren said curtly. Nor was there. They found Squint floating face down in the moat, his entrails drifting behind him like a nest of pale snakes. Drennan lay half-naked in the gatehouse, in the snug room where the drawbridge was worked. His throat had been open ear to ear. A ragged tunic concealed the half-heel scars on his back, but his boots were scattered amidst the rushes, and his breeches tangled about his feet. There was cheese on a small table near the door, beside an empty flagon and two cups. Theon picked one up and sniffed at the dregs of wine in the bottom. "Squint was up on the wall, no?" "Aye," said Lauren. Theon flung the cup into the hearth. "I'd say Drennan was pulling down his breeches to stick it in the woman when she stuck it in him. His own cheese knife, by the look of it. Someone find a pike and fish the other fool out of the moat." The other fool was in a deal worse shape than Drennan when Black Lauren drew him out of the water. They saw that one of his arms had been wrenched off at the elbow. Half of his neck was missing, and there was a ragged hole where his navel and groin had once been. The pike tore through his bowels as Lauren was pulling him in. The stench was awful. "The direwolves," Theon said. "Both of them, at a guess." Disgusted, he walked back to the drawbridge. Winterfell was encircled by two massive granite walls with a wide moat between them. The outer wall stood 80 feet high, the inner more than 100. Lacking men, Theon had been forced to abandon the outer defences and post his guards along the higher inner walls. He dared not risk having them on the wrong side of the moat should the castle rise against him. There had to be two more, he decided. While the woman was entertaining Drennan, the others freed the wolves. Theon called for a torch and led them up the steps to the wall walk. He swept the flame low before him, looking for... there! On the inside of the rampart, in the wide crenel between two upthrust merlins. "Blood," he announced. "Clumsily mopped up. At a guess, the woman killed Drennan and lowered the drawbridge. Squint heard the clank of chains, came to have a look, and got this far. They pushed the corpse through the crenel into the moat so he wouldn't be found by another sentry." Erzin peered along the walls.
"The other watch turrets and up fire. I see torches burning."
"Torches, but no guards," Theon said testily. "Winterfell has more turrets than I have men." 4 guards at the main gate," said Black Lauren, "and 5 walking the walls beside Squint." Erzin said,
"If he had sounded his horn..."
"I'm served by fools." "Try and imagine
It was you up there, Erzin. It's dark and cold. You have been walking sentry for hours, looking forward to the end of your watch. Then you hear a noise and you move forward to the gate, and suddenly you see eyes at the top of the stair, glowing green and gold in the torchlight. Two shadows come rushing toward you, faster than you can believe. You catch a glimpse of teeth, start to level your spear, and they slam into you and open your belly, tearing through leather as if it was cheesecloth. He gave Erzin a hard shove. And now you're down on your back. Your guts are spilling out, and one of them has his teeth round your neck. Theon grabbed the man's scrawny throat, tightening his fingers, and smiled. Tell me, at what moment, during all of this, do you stop to blow your fucking horn? He shoved Erzin away roughly, sending him stumbling back against a merlin. The man rubbed his throat. I should have had those beasts put down the day we took the castle, he thought angrily. I'd seen them kill. I knew how dangerous they were.
We must go after them, Black Lauren said.
Not in the dark. Theon did not relish the idea of chasing direwolves through the wood by night. The hunters could easily become the hunted. We'll wait for daylight. Until then, I'd best go speak with my loyal subjects.
Down in the yard, an uneasy crowd of men, women, and children had been pushed up against the wall. Many had not been given time to dress. They covered themselves with woolen blankets or huddled naked under cloaks or bedrobes. A dozen iron men hemmed them in, torches in one hand and weapons in the other. The wind was gusting, and the flickering orange light reflected dully off steel helms, thick beards, and unsmiling eyes. Theon walked up and down before the prisoners, studying the faces. They all looked guilty to him.
How many are missing?
Six.
Reek stepped up behind him, smelling of soap, his long hair moving in the wind.
Bullstarks, that bug boy and his sister, the half-wit from the stable, and your wilding woman.
Usher.
He had suspected her from the moment he saw that second cup.
I should have known better than to trust that one. She's as unnatural as Asher. Even their names sound alike.
Has anyone had a look at the stables?
Igar says no horses are missing.
Dancer is still in his stall?
Dancer?
Reek frowned.
Igar says the horses are all there. Only the halfwit is missing.
They're afoot, then.
That was the best news he'd heard since he woke. Bran would be riding in his basket, on Hodor's back, no doubt. Usher would need to carry Rickon. His little legs wouldn't take him far on their own. Theon was confident that he'd soon have them back in his hands.
Bran and Rickon have fled, he told the castle folk, watching their eyes. Who knows where they've gone?
No one answered.
They could not have escaped without help, Theon went on. Without food, clothing, weapons.
He'd locked away every sword and axe in Winterfell, but no doubt some had been hidden from him.
I'll have the names of all those who aided them. All those who turned a blind eye.
The only sound was the wind.
Come first light. I mean to bring them back.
He hooked his thumb through his sword belt.
I need huntsmen. Who wants a nice warm wolf skin to see them through the winter? Gage?
The cook had always greeted him cheerfully when he returned from the hunt to ask whether he'd brought anything choice for the table, but he had nothing to say now. Theon walked back the way he'd come, searching their faces for the least sign of guilty knowledge.
The wild is no place for a cripple. And Rickon, young as he is, how long will he last out there? Nan, think how frightened he must be.
The old woman had nattered at him for 10 years, telling her endless stories, but now she gaped at him as if he were some stranger.
I might have killed every man of you and given your women to my soldiers for their pleasure, but instead I protected you. Is this the thanks you offer?
Joseph, who'd groomed his horses, Farlan, who taught him all he knew of hounds, Barth, the brewer's wife, who'd been his first, none of them would meet his eyes.
They hate me, he realized.
Reek stepped close.
"Strip off their skins,"
he urged, his thick lips glistening.
"Lord Bolton, he used to say, a naked man has few secrets, but a flayed man's got none."
The flayed man was the sigil of House Bolton, Theon knew. Ages past, certain of their lords had gone so far as to cloak themselves in the skins of dead enemies. A number of Starks had ended thus. Supposedly all that had stopped 1,000 years ago, when the Boltons had bent their knees to Winterfell. Or so they say, but always die hard, as well I know. "There will be no flaying in the North so long as I rule in Winterfell," Theon said loudly. "I am your only protection against the likes of him," he wanted to scream. He could not be that blatant, but perhaps some of them were clever enough to take the lesson. The sky was greying over the castle walls. Dawn could not be far off. "Joseph, saddle Smiler, and a horse for yourself. Murch, Garrus, Poxy Tim, you'll come as well." Murch and Garrus were the best huntsmen in the castle, and Tim was a fine bowman. "Aegar, Red Nose, Gelmar, Reek, Wex." He needed his own to watch his back. "Fardon, I want hounds, and you to handle them." The grizzled kennel master crossed his arms.
"And why would I care to hunt down my own true-born lords and babes at that?"
Theon moved close. "I am your true-born lord now, and a man who keeps Parla safe." He saw the defiance die in Farland's eyes.
"Aye, my lord."
Stepping back, Theon glanced about to see who else he might add.
"Maester Lewin," he announced.
"I know nothing of hunting."
"No, but I don't trust you in a castle in my absence." "Then it's past time you learned."
"Let me come too. I want that wolfskin cloak."
A boy stepped forward, no older than Bran. It took Theon a moment to remember him.
"I've hunted lots of times before," Walder Frey said. "Red deer and elk and even boar."
His cousin laughed at him.
"He rode in a boar hunt with his father, but they never let him near the boar."
Theon looked at the boy doubtfully.
"Come if you like, but if you can't keep up, don't think that I'll nurse you along."
He turned back to Black Lauren. "Winterfell is yours in my absence. If we do not return, do with it as you will."
"That bloody well ought to have them praying for my success."
They assembled by the Hunter's Gate. As the first pale rays of the sun brushed the top of the bell tower, their breaths frosting in the cold morning air. Gelmar had equipped himself with a long axe whose reach would allow him to strike before the wolves were on him. The blade was heavy enough to kill with a single blow. Aegar wore steel greaves. Reek arrived carrying a boar spear and an overstuffed washerwoman's sack bulging with God knows what. Theon had his bow. He needed nothing else. Once he had saved Bran's life with an arrow. He hoped he would not need to take it with another. But if it came to that, he would. 11 men, 2 boys, and 12 dogs crossed the moat. Beyond the outer wall, the tracks were plain to read in the soft ground. The paw prints of the wolves. Hodor's heavy tread. The shallower marks left by the feet of the 2 reeds. Once under the trees, the stony ground and fallen leaves made the trail harder to see, but by then Farland's red bitch had the scent. The rest of the dogs were close behind, the hounds sniffing and barking, a pair of monstrous mastiffs bringing up the rear. Their size and ferocity might make the difference against a cornered direwolf. He'd have guessed that Usher might have run south to Sir Roderick. But the trail led north by northwest, into the very heart of the Wolf's Wood. Theon did not like that one bit. It would have been a bitter irony if the Starks had made for Deepwood Mutt and delivered themselves right into Asher's hands. "I'd sooner have them dead," he thought bitterly. "It is better to be seen as cruel than foolish." Wisps of pale mist threaded between the trees. Sentinels and soldier pines grew thicker about here, and there was nothing as dark and gloomy as an evergreen forest. The ground was uneven, and the fallen needles disguised the softness of the turf and made the footing treacherous for the horses, so they had to go slowly. Not so slowly as a man carrying a cripple, though, or a bony harridan with a four-year-old on her back. He told himself to be patient. He'd have them before the day was out. Maester Lewin trotted up to him as they were following a game trail along the lip of a ravine.
"Thus far, hunting seems indistinguishable from riding through the woods, my lord."
Theon smiled. "There are similarities, but with hunting, there's blood at the end."
"Must it be so? This flight was great folly. But will you not be merciful? These are your foster brothers we seek."
"No Stark but Rob was ever brotherly toward me. But Bran and Rickon have more value to me living than dead."
"The same is true of the Reeds. Moat Cailin sits on the edge of the bogs. Lord Howland can make your uncle's occupation a visit to hell if he chooses. But so long as you hold his ears, he must stay his head."
Theon had not considered that. In truth, he had scarcely considered the Mudmen at all, beyond eyeing Mira once or twice and wondering if she was still a maiden. "You may be right. We will spare them if we can."
"And Hodor, too, I hope. The boy is simple, you know that. He does as he's told. How many times has he groomed your horse, soaped your saddle, scoured your mail?"
"Hodor was nothing to him."
"If he does not fight us, we will let him live." Theon pointed a finger. "But say one word about sparing the wildling, and you can die with her. She swore me an oath, and pissed on it."
The maester inclined his head.
"I make no apologies for oathbreakers. Do what you must. I thank you for your mercy."
"Mercy?" thought Theon, as Lewin dropped back. "There's a bloody trap. Too much, and they call you weak. Too little, and you're monstrous." Yet the maester had given him good counsel, he knew. His father thought only in terms of conquest, but what good was it to take a kingdom if you could not hold it? Force and fear could carry you only so far. A pity Ned Stark had taken his daughter south. Elsewise, Theon could have tightened his grip on Winterfell by marrying one of them. Sansa was a pretty little thing, too, and by now likely even ripe for bedding. But she was a thousand leagues away, in the clutches of the Lannisters. A shame. The wood grew ever wilder. The pines and sentinels gave way to huge dark oaks. Tangles of hawthorn concealed treacherous gullies and cuts. Stony hills rose and fell. They passed a crofter's cottage, deserted and overgrown, and skirted a flooded quarry where the still water had a sheen as grey as steel. When the dogs began to bay, Theon figured the fugitives were near at hand. He spurred Smiler and followed at a trot. But what he found was only the carcass of a young elk, or what remained of it. He dismounted for a closer look. The kill was still fresh, and plainly the work of wolves. The dog sniffed around it eagerly, and one of the mastiffs buried his teeth into a haunch until Farland shouted him off. No part of this animal has been butchered, Theon realized. The wolves ate, but not the men. Even if Usher did not want to risk a fire, she ought to have cut them a few steaks. It made no sense to leave so much good meat to rot. Farlan, are you certain we're on the right trail? He demanded. Could your dogs be chasing the wrong wolves?
My bitch knows the smell of Summer and Shaggy well enough.
I hope so, for your sake. Less than an hour later, the trail led down a slope toward a muddy brook swollen by the recent rains. It was there the dogs lost the scent. Farlan and Wex waded across with the hounds and came back shaking their heads, while the animals ranged up and down the far bank sniffing.
They went in here, my lord, but I can't see where they come out, the kennel master said.
Theon dismounted and knelt beside the stream. He dipped a hand in it. The water was cold.
They won't have stayed long in this,
he said. Take off the dogs downstream. I'll go up. Wex clapped his hands together loudly. What is it? Theon said. The mute boy pointed. The ground near the water was sodden and muddy. The tracks the wolves had left were plain enough. Paw prints, yes. So? Wex drove his heel into the mud and pivoted his foot this way and that. It left a deep gouge. Joseph understood. A man the size of Hodor ought to have left a deep print in this mud, he said, more so with the weight of a boy on his back. Yet the only boot prints here are our own. See for yourself. Appalled, Theon saw it was true. The wolves had gone into the turgid brown water alone. Usher must have turned aside, back of us, before the elk, most likely. She sent the wolves on by themselves, hoping we'd chase after them. He rounded on his huntsman. If you two have played me false.
There's been only the one trail, my lord, I swear it, said Garrus defensively. And the direwolves would never have parted from them boys, not for long.
That's so, Theon thought. Summer and Shaggy Dog might have gone off to hunt, but soon or late they would return to Bran and Rickon. Garrus, Murch, take four dogs and double back. Find where we lost them. Aegar, you watch them. I'll have no trickery. Farlan and I will follow the direwolves. Give a blast on your horn when you pick up the trail. Two blasts if you catch sight of the beasts themselves. Once we find out where they went, they'll lead us back to their masters. He took Wex, the Frey boy, and Ginner Rednose to search upstream. He and Wex rode on one side of the brook, Rednose and Walder Frey on the other, each with a pair of hounds. The wolves might have come out on either bank. Theon kept an eye out for tracks, spoor, broken branches, any hint as to where the dire wolves might have left the water. He spied the prints of deer, elk, and badger easily enough. Wex surprised a vixen drinking at the stream, and Walder flushed three rabbits from the underbrush and managed to put an arrow in one. They saw the claw marks where a bear had shredded the bark of a tall birch, but of the dire wolves there was no sign. A little farther, Theon told himself. Past that oak, over that rise, past the next bend of the stream, we'll find something there. He pressed on, long after he knew he should turn back, a growing sense of anxiety gnawing at his belly. It was midday when he wrenched Smiler's head around in disgust and gave up. Somehow Usher and the wretched boys were eluding him. It should not have been possible, not on foot, burdened with a cripple and a young child. Every passing hour increased the likelihood that they would make good their escape. If they reach a village, the people of the north would never deny Ned Stark's sons, Robb's brothers. They'd have mounts to speed them on their way, food. Men would fight for the honor of protecting them. The whole bloody north would rally around them. The wolves went downstream, that's all. He clung to the thought. That red bitch will sniff where they came out of the water and will be after them again. But when they joined up with Farland's party, one look at the kennel master's face smashed all of Theon's hopes to shards. The only thing those dogs are fit for is a bear baiting, he said angrily. Would that I had a bear. The dogs are not at fault. Farland knelt between a mastiff and his precious red bitch, a hand on each. Running water don't hold no sense, my lord. The wolves had to come out of the stream somewhere. No doubt they did, upstream or down. We keep on. We'll find the place, but which way? I never knew a wolf to run up a stream bed for miles, said Reek. A man might, if he knew he was being hunted. He might. But a wolf? Yet Theon wondered. These beasts were not as other wolves. I should have skinned the cursed things. It was the same tale all over again when they rejoined Garrus, Murch, and Aegar. The huntsmen had retraced their steps halfway to Winterfell without finding any sign of where the Starks might have parted company with the direwolves. Farland's hounds seemed as frustrated as their masters, sniffing forlornly at trees and rocks and snapping irritably at each other. Theon dared not admit defeat. "We'll return to the brook. Search again. This time we'll go as far as we must."
"We won't find them," the Frey boy said suddenly. "Not so long as the frog eaters are with them. Mudmen are sneaks. They won't fight like decent folk. They'll skulk and use poison arrows. You never see them, but they see you. Those who go into the bogs after them get lost and never come out. Their houses move, even the castles like Greywater Watch."
He glanced nervously at greenery that encircled them on all sides.
"They might be out there right now, listening to everything we say."
Fardon laughed to show what he thought of that notion.
"Or my dogs would smell anything in them bushes. Be all over them before you could break wind, boy."
"Frog eaters don't smell like men," Frey insisted. "They have a boggy stink, like frogs and trees and scummy water. Moss grows onto their arms in place of air, and they can live with nothing to eat but mud and breathe swamp water."
Theon was about to tell him what he ought to do with his wet nurse's fable when Maester Lewin spoke up.
"The histories say the Crannog men who grew close to the children of the forest in the days when the green seers tried to bring the hammer of the waters down upon the neck. It may be they have secret knowledge."
Suddenly, the wood seemed a deal darker than it had a moment before, as if a cloud had passed before the sun. It was one thing to have some fool boy spouting folly, but maesters were supposed to be wise. "The only children that concern me are Bran and Rickon," Theon said. "Back to the stream, now." For a moment he did not think they were going to obey, but in the end old habit asserted itself. They followed sullenly, but they followed. The Frey boy was as jumpy as those rabbits he'd flushed earlier. Theon put men on either bank and followed the current. They rode for miles, going slow and careful, dismounting to lead the horses over treacherous ground, letting the good-for-bear-bait hounds sniff at every bush. Where a fallen tree dammed the flow, the hunters were forced to loop around a deep green pool. But if the direwolves had done the same, they'd left neither print nor spoor. The beasts had taken to swimming, it seemed. "When I catch them, they'll have all the swimming they can stomach. I'll give them both to the drowned god." When the woods began to darken, Theon Greyjoy knew he was beaten. Either the Crannog men did know the magic of the children of the forest, or else Usher had deceived them with some wilding trick. He made them press on through the dusk, but when the last light faded, Joseph finally worked up the courage to say, "This is fruitless, my lord. We will lame a horse, break a leg."
"Joseph has the right of it," said Maester Lewin. "Groping through the woods by torchlight will avail us nothing."
Theon could taste bile at the back of his throat, and his stomach was a nest of snakes twining and snapping at each other. If he crept back to Winterfell empty-handed, he might as well dress in motley henceforth and wear a pointed hat. The whole North would know him for a fool. "And when my father hears, an usher."
"My lord prince," Reek urged his horse near, "might be them Starks never came this way. If I was them, I would have gone north and east, maybe, to the Umbers. Good Stark men they are. But their lands are a long way. The boys would shelter someplace nearer. Might be, I know where."
Theon looked at him suspiciously. "Tell me."
"You know that old mill, sitting lonely on the Acorn Water? We stopped there when I was being dragged to Winterfell a captive. The miller's wife sold us hay for our horses, while that old knight clucked over her brats. Might be the Starks ride in there."
Theon knew the mill. He had even tumbled the miller's wife a time or two. There was nothing special about it, or her. "Why there? There are a dozen villages and Holdfast just as close." Amusement shone in those pale eyes.
"Why?
Now that's past knowing. But they're there. I've a feeling.
He was growing sick of this man's sly answers. His lips looked like two worms fucking.
What are you saying? If you've kept some knowledge from me.
My lord prince, Reek dismounted and beckoned Theon to do the same. When they were both afoot, he pulled open the cloth sack he'd fetched from Winterfell.
Have a look here.
It was growing hard to see. Theon thrust his hand into the sack impatiently, groping amongst soft fur and rough, scratchy wool. A sharp point pricked his skin, and his fingers closed around something cold and hard. He drew out a wolf's head brooch, silver and jet. Understanding came suddenly. His hand closed into a fist.
Gilmar,
he said, wondering whom he could trust.
None of them. Aegar, Red Nose, with us. The rest of you may return to Winterfell with the hounds. I have no further need of them. I know where Bran and Rickon are hiding now.
Prince Theon, Maester Luwin entreated, you will remember your promise. Mercy, you said.
Mercy was for this morning, said Theon.
It is better to be feared than laughed at.
Before they made me angry.